people in the room as Texas heard the meeting.
To fire the gun.
Okay. House Committee on Revenue for February 2nd, 2009 will come to order. It does look like winter's about to be over. I don't see any sun today. We will be starting with our public hearing on House Bill 2157, and we'll open the public hearing on that bill. I know we have at least one person signed up to testify on it, but I don't have the sign-up sheet. And it appears to be Jonathan Ames. Good morning.
Good morning. Hopefully I'm that ray of sunshine this morning for you on this cold, cold day, or maybe not. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Ames. I'm with PacWest Communications, and I'm here on behalf of the Smart Growth Coalition. The Smart Growth Coalition represents Intel, Schnitzer Steel, Nike, Textronics, Columbia Sportswear, Monaco Coach, Precision Cast Parts, Greenbrier, and Genentech. And we're here today to encourage you to resist the temptation to disconnect from the federal tax code, either permanently or temporarily. Paul Phillips was supposed to be here, but I'm doing this in his place, so please be nice to me. We appreciate the budget challenges that you currently face, and we understand where this bill is going, and so we appreciate that as we move forward here. But there does truly need to be a balance regarding the long-term solutions for Oregon. There are two significant reasons why we don't want you to disconnect. First, you are mandating that all businesses in Oregon, if we do disconnect, keep two sets of books, one for the state and one for the federal, and we don't believe that makes sense. Second, as we recognize, there's a lot of change underway in Washington, D.C. It passes hour by hour whether the stimulus package is going to pass or not, and it probably is likely to pass. And as those changes happen, we want to be able to adapt to those changes. I know those changes are meant to strengthen our economy, and disconnection removes Oregon's ability to move and adapt to those changes. And given the speed under which Congress is acting, we should not create a situation where we're not able to fully appreciate those changes. We've faced this issue before, and members, both Democrat and Republican, have concluded that after thorough examination, being connected to the federal tax code, it has been a good decision. We're in a global economy that where those representing the state are doing everything they can do to keep businesses located here and bring new companies in. Disconnection will probably not be viewed as a positive state for companies looking at Oregon. So on behalf of the companies in the Smart Growth Coalition, we ask you to stick with the public policy decisions of the past that have helped Oregon's economy stay connected to the federal tax code.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Ames? I don't see any. Oh, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much.
We were kind. You may tell Mr. Phillips.
I will. I
have just received two documents, one from Bill Olson and one from John Mullen. Is there someone here who wants to speak to them, or shall we just put them in the record? Yes, sir. Please come up.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. Members of the committee, my name is Bill Olson. I'm the co-chair of the Advocacy Coalition of Seniors and People with Disabilities. I'm also here, and I submitted a testimony on behalf of John Mullen, who is the co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon and member of the Oregon Law Center. Our joint concern, the concern of both coalitions, is that we're facing an unprecedented situation economically in this country, and we don't really know how deep this recession is going to go. We don't know how long it's going to last. Our position is that we have human services that are being cut substantially, at least in the governor's recommended budget, and our request, our recommendation to you is that you move ahead with the disconnect or terminating the automatic rolling reconnection by passing House Bill 2157, Amendment 3, that's all we have to say, really. Our concern is with human services and funding in general for the state at an unprecedented time, and we think that maximum flexibility on the part of the state is the appropriate stance. That's what I have.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard this morning on House Bill 2157? I don't see anyone. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2157 and open a work session on House Bill 2157. Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, I move the -3 amendments.
Representative Reed moves the -3 amendments. Discussion. Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I have find myself without the...
The -3 is the amendment that establishes the disconnect.
Mr. Chair, I think we are very, as I expressed Friday, I think we are very premature with this disconnect. The testimony we just heard, for instance, concerning, you know, what may be coming, we don't know what's coming. We do know that traditionally... there's constant changes to federal tax code, and there is plenty of time in this session to react to that once we have a much better picture of what those changes are and what's coming at us. I think that it is right now in the middle of the tax time, a very premature time to start messing in the and disconnecting at this time. I would not say that there might not be compelling reasons to disconnect later, but this is not the time, Mr. Chair, and I will oppose this amendment.
Thank you. Other discussion on the -3 amendments? Yes, Representative Bruhn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I concur with Representative Berger. It's precipitous to do this now. As we established on Friday, there is nothing other than a House 4 tax vote, the numbers that would be required to get done, that changes what we're doing here today. There's no reason not to wait until we understand what we're voting to disconnect from, and we don't know that yet until the federal stimulus bill is fully deliberated and voted upon. So I, too, will be voting no on the adding the -3 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I must say this is one of the more confusing elements of the tax law, and I have not, in my own mind, determine which is going to be best for the state of Oregon. Being new to this process, though, it seems to me that the most important thing is the ability of this body to appropriately deliberate and think about these changes. And in talking to staff this morning, it seems that if we adopt the -3 amendments, then it's going to be more likely that many of the proposed federal changes will not receive the debate and review that they're going to deserve, and in fact may slip by for reasons that have little to do with consideration and analysis. And in my mind, this is a complex area, and it requires careful thought, and each of these issues should be given that thought. I'll be voting no.
Thank you, Representative Vance. I don't see anyone else. I think on this one we better call the roll. The vote is on the -3 amendments to House Bill 2157.
Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Berger.
No.
Representative Bruhn.
No.
Representative Delter.
Aye.
Representative Call.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
No.
Chair Barnhart.
Chair votes aye. The vote is 6-4. The motion passes. Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, I move the -4 amendments.
Representative Reed moves the -4 amendments. Discussion.
There's nothing.
I don't see any discussion. The -4s, as you'll recall, colleagues, are the technical changes that correct one error in the bill and add a couple of additional items that were missing from the original bill. Any discussion on the -4s?
It's a house cleaning.
It is. Okay, it is. Sure. Correct. Any objection to the -4s? I don't see any. The -4s are adopted. Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2157 be passed to the floor as amended with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Reed moves House Bill 2157 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Berger.
No.
Representative Ruin.
No.
Representative Belzer.
Aye.
Representative
Call.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative Turner.
No.
Chair
Barnhart. Aye. The motion having received the required majority is adopted, and the bill will go to the floor with the Duplass recommendation as amended. Tentatively, colleagues, I'm going to carry the bill. If anyone has a burning desire to do that, let me know. But that's my plan at this moment. Barnhart will carry, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2157. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2436. Mazin.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. 202, this would have been an appropriate bill. Quickly, Mr. Chair, to bring House Bill 2436. Bill 2436 deals with document recording fees. It's been a bill that has been in the works for a while. In the interim, your interim committee on revenue talked about this bill, but just to bring it to the attention of members who have not seen or interacted with it, House Bill 2432 follows a procedure, a fee that we have in statutes on the documents that are being recorded in the county level. The county level, county clerks do record a number of documents, and they charge for those recording by recording fees. Of course, the counties have the clerks, and there's the tax assessors, and then the tax collectors, and they all have their associations, and I'm sure that we probably you probably would hear from some of them today. The tax collectors do get 5% of the documents that they do in the other types of documents. However, there are two kinds of documents that does not have that 5% take from it. The one of them is the ORMAP, the Oregon mapping for the Department of Revenue. This is the tax lot maps for GIS and so on. This is a $1 fee that is not charged the recording and the collection fee for the county recorders. The $10 that we have for the assessment and taxation fund does go through the payment process. However, the change with this new fee that comes into place, it's a $15 in addition to any documents recording. However, there are a number of documents that are exempt from these new fees. And those documents are the mining claims and some liens and warrants from the departments, or a couple departments that we have. The bill also, after taking those amounts, establishes a new account in this, and continuously appropriates And from here, you would hear from the fiscal or the ways and means in the process, continuously appropriates these amounts to the new account, the general housing account. The amounts that the $15 bring out in revenue for this transaction, knowing that it will be effective 3 months or 91 days after sine die, which means that you will not have all 24 months of the 09-11 biennium. The revenue impact that Mr. Chair, we're looking at this time, as you would have in the revenue impact statement in front of you, about $5.7 million in the 2009-10 fiscal year. This is a fiscal year starting July 2009, ending June 2010. And the 10-11, that's $11.3 million for a total of the biennium of about $17 million. In 11-13, this amount starts picking up with the general recovery of the economic and the housing, the economic situation, the housing market, and we are expecting about $27.9 million in that time frame. And the continuous rebound, the economic rebound, will bring more housing and you know, document recording that would bring more revenue, at about $30.5 million in 13-15. Those amounts of revenue, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, are directed towards three different accounts at levels that you have also in your revenue impact statement. 76%, 10%, and 14% goes to the home ownership account. The final thing I need to bring to your attention, Mr. Chair, is this morning I have also the fiscal impact, initial or draft fiscal impact statement, and the fiscal impact statement does show revenue consistent with our estimates. That's what the fiscal office would take as its revenue section. However, in the expenditures, they do show a number of expenditures, both coming from the general fund as well as other funds. And those expenditures primarily come from the from two sources. The first one would be for the for the Department of Revenue having to pay for the $15 fee for the documents that it files with counties, because there is no exemption in the bill that have exempted them from that process. In addition, there are other departments, and that's where the other funds come in. This includes ODOT and DCBS and so on. Not all departments have been consulted or asked to submit a fiscal with that, but the exemption does not apply to them. And there are other administration and other costs, but that's where the fiscal side is, and I previously explained the revenue section.
Great. Questions for Mazin? Yes, Representative Berger.
On the expenditure, Mazin, this is state only. Presumably within this bill, cities and anyone, any other public agency that has a lien and files would also have a negative impact, or would cost them $15 filing also.
Representative Berger, that is correct. I think also in addition, the as I was explaining, the process by which the county clerks recover their costs is also not are exempt from this problem.
In other words, so in addition to loss of revenue for local government on filings, the county clerks have more work and are not paid more to cover. Could I put it that way?
I
I'm sure they would put it that way.
I am sure they have put it that way, Mazin. In other words, if I could rephrase, Mr. Chair,
yes, please,
to not put Mazin in quite the spot. Currently, there is a piece of the filings that accounts for the fact that the filing is work for them, and we are increasing the filing fee but not changing that piece that accounts for their work to do these filings. Is that put well enough?
Representative Berger, the process by which all document recording go through has been exempted this, but this is not the first time this has been done. The ORMAP $1 process also does not pay for these costs. So how that translates, I mean, is the mechanism exists there for the collection of fees like this? The mechanism obviously does. How much it costs and how much is that is, I guess, the discussion that you will be having and the policy that you would be going.
That is the referenced on the second page, I think, lines 27 through 38, if I understand the bill correctly.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is true. This is the process that by which the collection happens. As bring it to your attention in things like line 36, where you have D, these fees collected under ORS 205-323, which is
the scheme as it's set up here, right, basically says that the clerk gets 5% of any fee or tax that's not collected for the benefit of the clerk, except for the things A through D, and now we're adding an E. And E is this new fee we're talking about, if I understand the bill correctly.
Well, that's correct, Mr. Chair. However, if you see, to be more precise with this, the fees that are collected for the county assessor's funding, which is, if you go to Section 2 and line 44, you have B, which is, says a fee of $10 to be credited to so-and-so, and that's the assessor funding account. Mm-hmm. This fee goes through a different distribution that you would find it. And the third page, and that will go through from line 17 or line 18 to about line 26, where you have A, the big A, on line 20. That's 5% of the fee must be credited to the benefit of the county. 5% shall be to the benefit of the county clerk, and then 90% of that goes to deposited in the county assessment. So the process by which that goes through is not necessarily uniform with all fees. I mean, this fee has its own way of doing it as well. Now, in addition to that, the $1 fee, the ORMAP fee that you would see in line 43A, which says a fee of $1 to be credited, so and so, this does not get any costs deducted from it, which means that the full dollar goes to the ORMAP project.
Yes, thank you. And the new one goes under sub C, lines 25 through 27 on page 3. Is that correct?
The 4C, that's right, Mr. Chair.
And that goes to the County Assessment and Taxation Fund. And then if you refer to the County Assessment and Taxation Fund, this thing kind of moves along here in
right.
Several different pieces. But I just want to make certain we understand what the bill does. And what happens then to the County Assessment and Taxation Fund under this bill, and especially that $15 we're talking about.
The Mr. Chair, the County Taxation and Assessment Fund is not impacted by this bill. Most of the stuff that you see that regards or refers to that fund is language and style kind of changes. and in order to align how the process goes. So the fund itself does not work. The only thing that works differently is when you look in the fourth page, this is section four,
mm-hmm.
line six, that's the C, that's a new addition,
yes.
that says money deposited in and collected in the fund under so-and-so, which is a new $15 fee. That becomes just like a parking spot for the money, and then the money would be transferred later on to Housing and Community Services Department.
Okay, and that's sub B of sub 2 on line 14, I think.
That's correct.
On page 4, describes how that money is to be dispersed.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Berger.
I'm trying to get clarity here. And so let me ask the question in a way that gets...
And so am I. Please, go ahead.
...gets directly. Mazin, does any portion of this $15 assessment stay in the county, the extra 15, or does it all go to the state fund?
Representative Berger, it all transfers to the housing.
And so none stays with the county clerks?
That is correct.
Thank you. That's what I think I want to get on the record.
Thank you.
But in the case of some other assessments, there is something that stays in the county for their effort.
That is correct. And
thank you.
All the machinations that I went through just to show you the different ways it does.
Yes. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you very much. You and I are getting at the same point, but we're doing it in a different way. I did want to make certain that I could actually parse this bill, and I wasn't certain of that until we had this conversation. Yes, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the additional fee, it's an additional fee on the existing document that's filed. Is this correct?
That is correct.
So can I follow up as well? There's no new document that the clerks are not already... There's no new work that the clerks aren't already doing that's being created by the addition of the $15 fee on the documents that are already being filed.
Representative Gelser, there is no new documents. There is no new processes or no new... perhaps paperwork. However, the collecting the amounts, keeping it separately, sending it to a different place, and making and keeping records and accounts of it, that is new. I mean, the work that comes with this process is new. Is it big? How big is it? How significant? I'm sure that you would hear about during the testimony today. Whether it is, that will be basically the decision of how new the type of work that you will be, or the clerks will be facing. Now, remember, the clerks have different, the counties have different segments to their work. There is a clerk, which takes care of the documents. The county assessors and the county collectors, they all do different things, and they are funded in different ways.
Do you have enough?
I have enough.
You
thank
do.
You.
Thank you. I think I'd like to go ahead, unless there's another question on the technicals of the bill. We may be able to get some testimony from some of those who are actually involved in the preparation. I see that Representative Edwards is here. Did you want to be heard this morning on this bill?
Yes, please.
Please, come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Bailey, and members of the committee. For the record, I am David Edwards. I'm a state representative from House District 30, which encompasses Greater Hillsboro, North Plains, Roy, and Verbort. As you probably have surmised, I'm here in support of House Bill 2436. This bill will finish what we tried and failed to do in 2007, that is, create a dedicated, ongoing revenue source to help some of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens make the most of their lives, because with a home of your own comes hope and a promise of everything else. Oregon's current economic downturn has made the need for more and better affordable housing more urgent than ever. Oregon is among the 14 states with the highest rates of homelessness in the nation. Our homeless population is currently estimated at more than 13,000, and contrary to popular perception, most homeless Oregonians are families with children. In my home county of Washington County, for instance, an estimated 86% of the homeless population falls into this category. Modeled on legislation passed in several other states, including our neighbor to the north, House Bill 2436 creates a funding mechanism to assist these families and others in need. This bill will increase the existing state-imposed document recording fee by $15 per document to establish a general housing account. This account, to be administered by the Housing and Community Services Department, will provide an ongoing, dedicated revenue stream to increase housing opportunities for hardworking families, seniors, people with disabilities, and others left behind by the housing market. If approved, this bill will raise the current state-imposed fee to a total of $26 per document. The proposed $15 increase will generate an estimated $17 million in new funds for affordable housing in the 2009-11 biennium. The marginal increase in cost per transaction will have a profound impact on the lives of low-income Oregonians. Homelessness presents extraordinary challenges. It is a complex socioeconomic phenomenon that demands a thoughtful and permanent solution. This bill can be part of that solution, and at the same time, put people back to work building affordable housing. That is why this bill is supported by a broad coalition that includes not only the 65 members of the Housing Alliance, but also the Oregon Bankers Association, the Oregon Association of Realtors, and the Oregon Home Builders Association. I urge you to take speedy, positive action on House Bill 2436 so we can reassure low-income Oregonians that help is on the way.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Edwards? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Van Landingham. I work as a lawyer for Lane County Legal Aid in Eugene, and I think it's my job on behalf of the Housing Alliance, of which I'm a member, to try to explain what the bill does, how it relates to clerks' needs, and address some of the questions that were raised by the Chair, Representative Berger, and Representative Gelser. I'd like to ask that you look at our handout, which I believe they have, on behalf of the Housing Alliance. The white notebook, I'm being told. There is a document in that, yes. In my ear, I'm being told that the second section has a page that looks like this. The top of it says document recording fees.
Ah, yes.
This is a very confusing area. We have spent a fair amount of the past 2 years trying to understand it ourselves. I don't know that I'm an expert, but I think I understand it better now. Other people...
I am reassured that our eminent economist parses the bill the same way I do.
Yes.
So
yes,
I'm more assured as well. Please go ahead.
So what I think is important to understand is the current law already requires a number of fees when a real estate document is filed with the county clerk. And at the bottom of half of that page entitled Document Recording Fees, we have laid out what the current fees are. And we have parsed them so you understand how they are used. And then I'll talk about the filing process and about the county clerks. So under the current arrangement, when someone files a document, state law requires that $11 be paid in a filing fee, at least. Of that $11, $1 goes to the State Land Information System Fund. $9 goes to the Department of Revenue, which then parcels it out to counties to use for the assessment and taxation function. And that was part of an agreement worked out in 1989. In which the counties were given greater resources to update property tax assessments. 50 cents of that $11 goes to the clerks for their costs in recording documents already. And 50 cents goes to the counties for any use whatsoever. So that's $11 for each document. Sometimes there's more than one document filed in a transaction. So for each document, that $11 fee would be paid. In addition, counties are also allowed by state law to charge other fees. And many of them, if not most of them, do that. They are allowed to charge up to $10 to support county surveyor operations. Clerks get 50 cents of that $10 for the filing of those documents. They're also entitled to charge up to $5, or excuse me, exactly $5 per page for every document. So on a one-page document, the fee could be, and probably is in most cases, $26. Of that $26, at least $1 goes to the clerk for the document, for the function of filing the document in their system. That's the current law. Our proposal is to increase the current $11 document recording fee by $15, with the increase dedicated to addressing the affordable housing crisis in the state of Oregon. Here's how the system works. A person who wants to file a real estate-related document, such as a deed, goes to the county clerks as usual. Current system. That person pays at least $11, perhaps $26, for that document. Under our proposal, instead of paying $26, they'd pay $41, or between $26 and $41. The clerk, as usual, takes the document already in the system, files it under the existing system. No change in the system whatsoever in terms of filing the document. Clerk takes a check. The current check is either 11 or 26 or somewhere in between. That check would be a higher amount. It's one check. It is the same one check. There is no new check being accepted here. It's one check for a larger amount of money, not for a different function. The clerk deposits that check into an already created fund in each county, created as part of the 1989 deal, the County Assessment and Taxation Fund. Once a quarter, the clerk is required already to take that money and send it to the Department of Revenue. We would change that so that the $15 portion of that fund, separated out, would be sent to Housing Community Services. That is the extent of the additional work required of clerks under this bill. Once a quarter, the clerk must separate out the affordable housing portion of the existing fee and send it to Housing Community Services. I could walk through the bill if it would be of great value. I don't think it would. That's the main portion of the bill. The first section of the bill addresses the issue of whether the clerk should get the automatic 5% deduction that's provided now in ORS 205.320, sub 18. If that's at the bottom of page 2, the chair already made you or called our attention to that place. That section in our bill would exempt the $15 increase from the clerk's automatic 5% deduction. Let me talk about why. We are, the Housing Alliance is certainly acutely aware of the financial needs of counties. The Housing Alliance met with the Association of Oregon Counties several months ago. We are quite aware of the county's need for funds for operations, for courthouse maintenance and improvements, for the assessment and taxation function. We also know that counties care about affordable housing. Counties are members of the Housing Alliance, and one of our members will be speaking later about the need to address the affordable housing crisis. On a note, at the bottom of page 2, that ORS 205.320 sub 18, the statute that creates the automatic clerk deduction of 5%, already includes several exemptions. There's an exemption now for a domestic violence fund fee. There's an exemption now for the conciliation fee. There's an exemption for the mapping system fee. We submit that our $15 increase in the current fee should be exempt as well. The clerks already get 5% of the fees that are charged now for recording documents. Our bill will not increase their work level in any substantial amount or way except to issue that quarterly check. I can answer questions about the rest of the bill. The other point I would make about the bill is that it does require Housing and Community Services to place a greater emphasis on addressing the disparity in homeownership rates between minority populations in Oregon and white populations in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Assuming that at some point we see housing values rise again, does this fee change at all over time, or is this a static fee?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bailey, it is a static fee. It does not change. The revenues, of course, would change because as the economy rebounds, we would expect more documents to be filed, more real estate transactions to occur. When the Housing Alliance submitted this bill in 2007, we expected the revenue forecast was significantly higher for this fee increase than it is right now.
But you didn't change the amount.
Mr. Chair,
from the 07 bill to this one.
That is correct. We have worked very hard with our private sector partners, and our agreement with our private sector partners was that we would stay at a $15 increase. We would not seek more, even though we realize the revenue generated from that is significantly lower. That's our agreement.
Thank you. Other questions? Who else is here today with the Alliance who you plan to have testify?
Commissioner Hall from Lincoln County and Janet Bird, who's the chair of the Housing Alliance.
All right. Others? No. Okay, why don't we have them come up next? Thank you. And thank you, Representative. I understand you have another committee.
I do, thank you.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, and thank you for your time today. My name is Bill Hall. I am a Lincoln County Commissioner, and I serve as Vice Chair of the Oregon Ending Homelessness Advisory Council. I come before you today in support of House Bill 2436. And I appreciate the opportunity that the Chair has provided to bring this bill forward so early in the session. As you will recall, we came very close last time, and we hope this time around we can put it over the top. My takeaway message to you is this. Although the housing bubble has burst, the affordable housing crisis in this state is far from over. In the notebooks supplied to you by the Housing Alliance, you will find need sheets for the counties you represent. Please take time to review them. When you do, you will see that this isn't a Portland problem or a Valley problem. It's an Oregon problem. Too many hardworking families can't afford to own a home of their own or even to pay fair market rents. In Lincoln County, I have spearheaded development of a plan to address homelessness and our housing affordability crisis. I have heard about nurses commuting from McMinnville to the hospital in Lincoln City due to housing costs. Our school districts and cities have lost teachers, planners, and other professional employees due to housing costs. We have been able to make some headway with our plan, but the gap between the need and the currently available resources is great. As an elected official, I understand that there will always be a demand for public services that far exceeds the revenues at hand. That's true even in good times, and even more so now in a situation like the one we're facing. Fortunately, there is a simple mechanism to assure an ongoing dedicated revenue stream for affordable housing, the document recording fee. There is precedent for this. In addition to Washington, six other states use a portion of their document fees for this purpose. As we've heard, the mechanisms for collecting and distributing these funds are already in place. The amount involved for the individual home buyer is small, and the base of support for this idea is broad, extending from dozens of advocacy groups and nonprofits to the bankers, realtors, and home builders. The need certainly is great. With the document fee in place, we can begin to address that need one hardworking family at a time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I also will note that your testimony is, at least in my notebook, is on the second page, and Janet Bird has also submitted materials that, at least in my notebook, are the first item out in the third after the second tab. So if you could summarize what you'd like to say or add additional information, that would be very helpful.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Janet Bird, and I'm the director of Neighborhood Partnerships and serve as the convener of the Housing Alliance. I'd like to echo Commissioner Hall and thank you for taking the time to hear this bill today. The Housing Alliance, as you've heard, is a statewide membership coalition of advocacy groups. Our members are listed on the left-hand side of the testimony that you have in your packet. House Bill 2436 will make real a goal that the Housing Alliance has had since our inception in 2004, the creation of a dedicated ongoing revenue source for affordable housing. House Bill 2436, which is in most respects identical to House Bill 3551, which many of you saw last session, will provide housing and community services with flexible resources that will allow them to work with partners over a long time horizon to respond to both needs and opportunities. The allocation formula in House Bill 2436 has been actively debated, and we believe it achieves a good balance between competing needs to prevent and end homelessness, provide safe, decent, and affordable housing to hardworking Oregonians, and create opportunities for homeownership and asset development. By the formula established in the bill, 76% of the revenue goes to the newly created general housing account. That's going to be used to support the entire spectrum of multifamily housing development. That could be rental units for hardworking families, could be special needs units depending on needs within the community for special populations, and could include funds for strategic land acquisition or resident purchase of manufactured home parks, all really important priorities within our communities. The bill requires rulemaking around allocation processes to ensure a statewide scope for all the programs of the department, a focus on meeting community needs, and equitable distribution among geographic areas over time. The bill also allows flexibility so that the department can respond to the changing external environment, including credit markets. And we've seen, certainly in the last several months, a need to be responsive to those external situations. A part of the resource will also support maintaining a vital network of community-based nonprofit housing providers who can respond to housing needs that the private market cannot. 10% of the revenue by formula goes to the emergency housing account. This is an existing account that's allocated by formula to the counties to meet, to address homelessness. It's a very flexible source of funds, can be used for shelters, can be used to provide short-term rent assistance, basically supports the full range of housing plus services that's needed to end homelessness. 14% of the revenue by formula will go to the home ownership assistance account. This also is an existing account which supports home buyer counseling and education, down payment assistance, and can also provide construction or land subsidies to make home ownership more affordable. This new revenue into the home ownership account will be an important support for Oregonians hoping to build assets through home ownership and for communities working to end the disparity in home ownership rates between whites and minorities. As you've also heard, House Bill 2436 comes before you today at the request of four associations: the Housing Alliance, the Oregon Association of Realtors, the Oregon Bankers Association, and the Oregon Home Builders Association. We've been working together over the past 18 months to build a better mutual understanding of housing needs in Oregon and of funding opportunities. We ask that you support House Bill 2436 and the housing opportunity it will create for low and moderate income Oregonians. We are all aware that House Bill 2436 does not go as far as we need to go to meet critical housing needs. The Housing Alliance has set a goal of $100 million per biennium in housing resources, and the document recording fee in this biennium will generate only a small fraction of that. But it's a significant start, and very importantly, the $15 increase imposed by House Bill 2436 is the maximum that our private industry partners can support. For that reason, we ask that you not support proposals that might come before you for additional document recording fees, and that you not support efforts to lift the preemption on real estate transfer taxes. Two bills, Senate Bill 396 and House Bill 2473, have already been introduced, and I ask on behalf of the Alliance that you not consider those proposals. That being said, there's also clearly more to be done in identifying revenue sources to meet the needs that we've identified. In this session, the Housing Alliance will also be supporting Housing and Community Services' request for $19.4 million in lottery-backed bonds to fund the preservation of existing subsidized housing that's at risk of conversion and to support resident purchase of manufactured home parks. We'll also be back in front of this committee, we imagine, requesting an increase to the cap on the Oregon affordable housing tax credits. And depending on the final contents of the federal stimulus package, we may be requesting general fund allocations to support meeting critical community needs such as foreclosure prevention, prevention of homelessness, food and nutrition supports. Finally, we hope to bring forward later this session a pilot program for voluntary inclusionary zoning that will help communities meet housing needs. There's been a work group, Joint Housing and Community Services and Land Conservation and Development Commission work group, working on proposals. The Housing Alliance has opted to support that voluntary inclusionary zoning package rather than try to lift a preemption on inclusionary zoning or impose mandatory inclusionary zoning this session. In closing, I want to thank you for your consideration again so early this session and for your ongoing support of our work to meet community housing needs. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Have questions for either of these witnesses? I have just one, and I think I know the answer to it, but I'm not certain. There is a bill, is there not, already in the House to increase the cap on the affordable housing tax credits?
I believe it's a Senate bill, 199.
It may very well be a Senate bill. I think I saw it on the green
sheet. Senate bill 199.
Yeah, thank you. And the reason I ask is today is the last day to file requests with the Legislative Council, and if that hadn't been done, we'd want to do it.
Thank you, Chair.
I appreciate that. thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Next on my list, and I'm not sure you're connected, but I'm going to call you up together, Ann Hannes and James Morales. Please. Looks like we got a third. And while we're passing out the materials, I want you to know that we do enter all written testimony in the record. Committee members are urged to read it, so if you could summarize what you have written, that will save us a little time without losing any information for the committee. Please.
Very well. I will do so. James Morales, Benton County Clerk, on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. Do I need to give my address?
No.
Okay. There it is.
I think we know where to find you.
Okay. Okay, I'll summarize real quick, and then I'll address, I think, some of the questions that may have come up in previous testimony. We have provided the legislators here today with information about the background on the fee, as well as the systems and processes which these fees were intended to support in the county. And when I say these fees, I'm talking about the 5% that is dedicated to the clerk's operations. One of the questions I think that were, or things that were submitted was that what I feel was an oversimplified explanation of the intent of the clerk's fee and what it's intended to support. And that would be that not just administrative fees, also the systems that we are required to purchase in the clerk's office. And the purchase of those comes from county funds. So what we're looking to do and would like to continue to do, and I think we've shown in the spreadsheet that we provided to this committee, which would be on the second page of what I've provided you. Have you all received that yet? There's a spreadsheet that shows the amount that actually goes into the clerk's dedicated fund to support these systems, as well as what our annual costs are to run the clerk's office and support the software and the equipment that we need to be able to permanently maintain these records. You'll see in the blue column, that is going to be the dedicated fee. That's what we actually get, which in no way pays for the operations and the equipment and the systems that run our office. As a matter of fact, you'll see that it's millions of dollars short of supporting the costs of in the operations, and that can be seen in the red column. That's the difference between it's the Representative Berger, did you?
Mr. Chair, he's talking about red and blue, but I'm not seeing
there any. He has a document that looks like this.
I got it.
And the very last page is a spreadsheet.
Got it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Berger.
So in that spreadsheet, I've gathered information from all of Oregon's county clerks, and what we're showing there are the A&T fees, the OLIS fees, which is the exempted $1 fee. That's the amount that we collect in that. The land corner preservation fee, which varies from county to county. The $10 is actually the maximum a county can set on that fee. Some collect 4, some 6, some 10, the full amount. So that actually varies. And then some counties have other dedicated fees, such as in Benton County, we have a GIS fee of $15 that is also assessed. So the first page in Benton County is already $41 for any document. So, like I said, the blue column, that's what we actually collect in 5%. The very next column will show you that our actual cost of running the office is in no way covered by the 5% fee that we're able to maintain for our offices. In the bill, House Bill 2436, I think you'll find it interesting if you'll take a quick look at page 7 in section 10, subsection 6, which is row 29 on page 7. This is the Housing and Community Services Department may use the monies in the account to pay allowable administrative expenses incurred under ORS 456-515 to 725. That's 25 pages of what the Housing and Community Services Department is asked to do through statute. No new services will be provided, but here's some new administrative monies that will be coming to the Housing and Community Services Department of the state through this fee. And they will be allowed to expend those funds for administrative costs. I just want to point that out, that we have more administrative work, no new administrative money. They have no new tasks, more money, but they can use it for administrative fees. We will not receive anything for our administrative costs. So what we are point out that we're not opposed to this bill. We are neutral to the bill, but we would like to see amendments to allow the 5% fee authorized by your previous colleagues, previous legislatures, on these fees that we collect for entities that are beyond the county clerk's operation for which the recording is being done. And so we're simply asking the members of this committee to recognize that and put that forward within this bill, if you do push the bill forward.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay.
We'll take questions when you're finished.
Okay.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Jan Coleman. I'm with Yamhill County, and I'm representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks today also. A few things I'd like to respond to from previous testimony. They were addressing things that are already deducted, that we get no 5%. They are on page 2 of the bill, lines 33 through 36. They address the domestic violence fund, the conciliatory fees, and real estate transfer tax. Real estate transfer tax, the only county that has that is Washington County. Okay. The other two fees, in conjunction with those fees, a lot of counties have no conciliatory fee to begin with. My county doesn't, and I think there are really very few in the state that do. So that one doesn't enter in. The domestic violence fund is a whole separate piece of the marriage license fee that we charge. So basically, domestic violence is 50%, and ours is 50%. So the county's already getting 50%. So anyway, just to give you background on that. The other thing is with, I've been with the Clerks Association a long time. I was present when the ANT was instituted, and I might tell you that the breakdown of that fee and the actual 5% to the county and the 5% to the clerks, and then no charge to the $1 fee on the OLIS or the mapping fee, was actually a reconciliation between the clerks and revenue that came because we were going to court. Because the clerks said the law says we get 5% and we were not getting our 5%. So it finally came down to a reconciliation of this. And by the way, the 5% to the county that's not the clerk's portion, we need to recognize that the treasurer is doing some transferring of money here. There is, you know, some reimbursement in that 5% for that happening. It's not just going to the county, as was stated earlier. Also, it was brought up to ask that you not consider any increased recording fees for other bills, of which I know the ANT is asking for an increase. I know that the State Archives is asking for something. Actually, those bills, they're reinforcing things that are already on recording that are actually for and going back to county services. So that's what recording has supported in the past, and I just bring that to your attention. The other thing, my testimony, we had some revenue forecast here for earlier, and now I see there's a new forecast, which is good. Our earlier forecast in September of 2008 was that there would be a biennial revenue estimate for this added $15 fee of $19,600,000. If you do the 5% per county, on that, it comes down to $27,200. And if you take it down to a yearly fee, it comes down to $13,600 per county, of which actually with the new estimate, it would be closer to $11,000 per county. And actually, if you did that proportionate to the size of the counties, the small counties are getting way less than that, and the big counties are getting more. Anyway, you will see that the spreadsheet we gave you for costs, there's definitely not an equity in there. We have more like the 3% increase in budget for a 50% fee we're boosting on this collection. I might point out that for the $15 collected, the county is only getting 75 cents. So if that puts it better in perspective for you. The other thing I'd like to draw to your attention is that this really is an unfunded mandate to counties if you're expecting them to utilize equipment, buildings, all their resources, et cetera, to collect the fee for the state and get nothing from it. It certainly is not an equitable thing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ann Hannes, and I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. These are tough times for both the state and the counties. We're facing loss of revenue, demands for public services are up, and counties over the next 4 years are going to see a ramping down of the federal forest payments. While this bill does a very laudable thing in helping low-income Oregonians, and I do want to point out that it is supported by several individual counties, my testimony, however, is just focused on the need to compensate county clerks for performing a state service, and that is the collection of this $15 low-income housing fee. counties believe very strongly that county budgets cannot and should not bear the burden of added expenses associated with collecting new statewide fees for a statewide program. And AOC did vote in support of the clerks on that position. They use the 5% to purchase equipment, storage, software, and pay for personnel costs associated with collecting and reconciling the fees. In order to correct this in the bill, we'd ask that House Bill 2436 be amended by deleting lines 37 and 38 on page 2. We recently surveyed the counties with the assistance of the county clerks, and they are seeing an average of about a 20% drop in recordings in 2008 compared to 2007, and I expect that that's probably on the conservative side of what we'll see in 2009. So they're facing a drop in revenues, and current fees don't fully cover their existing recording expenses. As a result, they and the counties are not in a financial position to assume the cost of collecting a new fee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell us which counties have adopted a position in support of 2436?
The entire Association of Oregon Counties, voted as a whole in support of this. There are individual counties that are supporting the alliance, the Housing Alliance bill before you.
Kirk, can I follow up?
Yes, please.
Thank you. So is it possible that, might a county clerk within a county take a position that's different than the county commission in the county that they...
Sure.
Chair Bernhardt, Representative Gelser, yes, that is possible. In this case, however, the Association of Oregon Counties, and it was a unanimous vote, voted in support of the county clerks.
And I want to make certain that we understand what it is they're supporting.
They are supporting, and this is very narrow on the bill,
right.
They are supporting a 5% for the county clerks.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. It wasn't entirely clear that that was the position, but I appreciate knowing that. Other questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Berger.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Barnhart. I think it was Ms. Cole who mentioned on line 35, page 2, the real estate transfer tax enacted January 19, that is only applies to Washington County. And that is, what is that exactly? I know you're not from Washington County, but it is a tax on transfers, real estate transfers only?
To my knowledge, I'm sorry, Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, to my knowledge, yes, but... they're, you know, basically pretty much all I know is they're the only one in the state that have any kind of a transfer tax.
Yes.
Please. I guess I want to know what a transfer tax is.
It's what a transfer tax is usually a tax on somebody selling a property to someone else. They'll take a percentage usually of whatever the value of the property is. So, in essence, they have a person on their staff who has to figure out that percentage and separate it out, and it's charged, however, on the actual deed process.
Thank you.
This looks like a pretty classic grandfather clause when the state preempted on that issue.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Yes, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this question may be for Mazin, but I noticed in our fiscal analysis of proposed legislation, our office finds that the county government would have a fiscal impact to implement this measure. And for a similar measure, county costs were estimated at 75 cents or $1.50 per document. Have you, Clerk Morales, had a chance to put a number to what this is going to cost the clerks?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, at the time that the 5% fee was implemented back in 1999, we did a statewide analysis of what the costs are to the county and the county clerks at the time that we were asked to collect a new fee. And what we came out to was an average cost per county, because it varied somewhat, of approximately 5%, and that's how we landed on the 5% fee, and the legislature was able to agree that when we were asked to collect any fee, that we be provided with the 5%.
Yes, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The number here, the estimate is 75 cents to $1.50 per document, but it would be a bit of an estimate no matter what you did, I suppose. But my question is, because of this addition, where is the additional work? When I spoke with Clerk DeLong in Malheur County on Saturday, the suggestion was that you had to actually explain to some of the people that came in the nature of the fee and that this took time. And then in addition, you ended up basically arguing for or against or whatever, but explaining the fee. Do you anticipate that you'll have additional work to do as a result of this add-on?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bence, we definitely do have some explaining to do. when we have a new fee, we have to generate a new fee tables. We have to change our websites if we have some. We have to change our systems to reflect the new fee. We have to change our processes if we're going to be, finance in our case would be having to separate the fee out into the three different percentages that are going to go to the state. And we do have to explain the fees quite often to our constituents at the counter when we give them the shock of the cost of recording a document. We did that when we implemented the GIS fee in Benton County, and I would foresee us having to do that once again. So, yes, that's accurate what you had learned from the Malheur County Clerk.
Yes, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last question. There didn't seem to be a chart or breakdown of the nature of the documents that are actually going to be subjected to this fee. The assumption appears to be housing transactions, but my experience as an attorney in recording instruments would suggest that the types of documents is far broader than that. Do you have a breakdown of the nature of the documents and thus the people who are going to be paying this fee? Just a general one would do.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bence, we have a list of hundreds of documents of the different types of recordings that are allowed to come through our office. This particular bill is exempting some of those documents. Would you have some examples, Jan, that you would like to give on the documents? I would say they would go, you know, beyond the deed, beyond the loan document. This would go to probably easements or also to maybe a death certificate or something like that, or power of attorney if somebody's granting power of attorney. So yes, it would go there. And then there's just so many plats as well. I hadn't thought of that. Probably partition plats.
Plats and partitions, anything that basically is recorded under deed and mortgage records, and that takes in a huge amount of documentation. Assignments of that type of document, all of that type of thing.
Yeah. Satisfaction.
The other, the other thing we're going to have to do is figure out, the people at the counter have to figure out which ones of those that fee goes on.
And which are exempted as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, this is most interesting, and I wondered if the folks before us could write down the names of all those. Since you're going to have to do it anyway at the table, maybe you could do it ahead of time and provide us with that list of... Thank you.
Thank you. The question I had had to do with the reality that the number of documents being recorded is declining, and I'm interested in knowing if you have a sense of it, what portion of your costs are fixed, regardless of how many documents you record, and what portion of them may vary based on the fact that there are fewer documents being recorded. I know that in some counties, the way that will work will be different. But I know so little about the way the counties, clerks actually conduct this part of their business, that your estimate would be helpful.
A fixed cost. Okay.
Fixed versus variable costs. In the document prepared by Jan Coleman, there is an indication on the second page of the number of recordings And I think the testimony that we've heard so far is that recordings are likely to be even lower numbers in 2009. Understanding how much that changes your costs would also, I think, be useful information. If you need fewer employees to process documents when you have fewer documents, that sort of thing.
We can do that.
Thank you. Anything else for this panel? Thank you very much. Our next panel is Jana Jarvis, John Chandler, and Linda Navarro.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Janet Jarvis, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. I come before you today, surprisingly perhaps, in support of House Bill 2436. I do want this committee to understand that at the conclusion of the 2007 session, we began a series of rather lengthy and involved discussions with representatives from the Oregon Housing Alliance about the issues that they were faced with, their funding requests, and a number of other issues related to the development of affordable housing. And I think the most interesting thing that came out of that is that we discovered that we had a number of issues, actually perhaps more issues in common in terms of issues related to development than we had initially suspected. And out of that, we agreed to support the document recording fee. And this agreement is a complex agreement. We wanted them to understand, members of the Alliance, to understand that affordable housing from other sources that they have gone after traditionally, such as real estate transfer taxes, were not positions that we could support for a number of reasons. And I want to also point out to you today, and you will notice that in my written testimony, that in this particular economic environment, you need to be very careful with how you pursue considering some of these other options. Currently, our homeownership rates are down. Now, they hit a high point in 2007. They've begun declining. They're substantially under the national average. When you look at the amount of inventory on the market at 4.1 months inventory that RMLS reported recently, and sales rates that are lower than since before 1992, you want to be careful in whatever you consider not to adversely impact what's already a risk-averse market. So with that in mind, and I apologize for the cough, we would ask you, as you consider House Bill 2436, that you understand that creating this source of dedicated revenue for affordable housing is something that the Oregon Association of Realtors will support. And we would ask, as Janet Bird did in her testimony, for you not to consider the other proposals, such as the two real estate transfer taxes that have been forwarded to both the House and Senate Revenue Committees. And I will conclude my testimony. I have a little more detail in my written testimony for you and be available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead. Whoever's next.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, members of the committee, I'm Linda Navarro. I'm president and CEO of the Oregon Bankers Association. Like Jana, the Oregon Bankers Association was at the table for 18 months discussing this proposal, and we come to you today in support of House Bill 2436. Oregon banks, as the finance partners in affordable housing projects, as well as in the personal finance needs of Oregonians, of course, carefully considered this proposal because the fact is it will increase the cost to consumers when they obtain a home loan or another kind of financing or record a power of attorney. And that's important to us because right now, as Jana said, said, is not the time to go overboard in increasing the cost of obtaining a home loan or other financial services. But we felt in the course of 18 months very strongly that not only was the need demonstrated for Oregon to have a stable source of funding for affordable housing, but that the document recording fee was one of the best ways to have a dedicated source of funding that would be available to Oregon's lower income Oregonians for years to come. So for those reasons, our association and our members are supporting this bill and ask you to do the same. Once again, I'll reiterate the importance of looking at this fee and any other fees that are proposed holistically, because $15 is a sizable increase to the fee in this state, and we feel that this would be the maximum that could be expected of Oregonians that will be faced with paying this fee on their filings. With that, thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, I'm the Chief Executive Officer for the Oregon Home Builders Association, here in support of House Bill 2436. I'd like to make two main points this morning. The first is I'd like to underscore and reiterate what you've heard already, the historic nature of the negotiations that brought us to this point. And I would like to commend this process to you. I'd like to publicly thank the Housing Alliance and Director Byrd for their work on this. We have, and many of you know this from being around this building for a while, we have had a running gun battle between the home builders, the realtors, the bankers, and the affordable housing folks over funding sources, approaches on land use, inclusionary zoning, other things. At the end of last session, we sat down and decided that we could either continue that, which is a pretty fun game, we're all pretty good at it, it really wasn't getting us very far, but what the heck, that's not illegal in this process, or we could actually try to do something cooperatively, jointly, to move the ball forward. We all shared an interest in affordable housing. We all understand the crying need for affordable housing at all income levels, not just rental, but ownership. This process that you have in front of you that gave rise to this bill, it's the first time, and I've been doing this quite a while, it's one of the very few times where opposing parties put the swords down, met for 18 months. We met almost on a monthly basis. We had the department involved. We had all sorts of people around the table. And I tell you what, folks, we learned a lot about each other's needs. We learned a lot about why we were objecting to certain proposals. I think they learned that. I understood far more about affordable housing and the machinations they have to go through as a provider, all the various funding tools and all the levels of the threading the wire through the holes in the paper to get the merest amount of money. This is a good bill. It was a good bill because we had a good process that gave rise to a good bill. It's not going to solve the problem, heavens knows. But it's going to make a good step, both in terms of the money, which is critical, but also in terms of the relationships that it built, in terms of where we're going to be interacting with the affordable housing people in the future and with regard to places where we had fought before. It's also, I think, a step towards a process that I'm guessing you'll see more and more coming forward. Oregon's facing a lot of real difficult problems where the opposing camps can go off to where they've done before and start lobbing grenades, or they can work together. I'd submit to you, working together is a lot more productive. And I'd also further ask you to keep that in mind as you consider this bill. Maybe it doesn't have everything in it you'd like. Maybe it doesn't have all the pieces that you wish had been in there. But the process that gave rise to it is one that I think worked and should be encouraged. And I would certainly ask you not to say, go try again, because frankly, it was a lot of work and there's a lot of other things going on. It may or may not happen again. This is a real interesting confluence of interests, and I think it's became a good process. Second big point I want to make, Mr. Chairman, is with regard to the counties. I used to have a kind of a quasi-cousin who was a county clerk, and whenever I'd make a speech like this, I'd always kind of feel bad because she'd call me. She's retired now, so I don't feel as bad. The counties need money. Absolutely, the counties need money. Every county, every city in this state needs more money. Our tax system is broken. Representative Barnhart and I and others spent a lot of time during the interim on a tax reform, tax restructuring. It wasn't a tax reform committee. There is a significant, grievous, deep problem facing Oregon local governments. I'll stipulate to that. I'll do that as many times this session as I have to. It has nothing to do with this bill. Their workload does not go up as a result of this bill, period. They're writing a check, maybe a bigger check, but they're writing a check. They're writing a check now. And in fact, I'd like to point out that the document recording fee that the counties already get, while it may not be enough, a separate issue, is one of the few times it's not an unfunded mandate, it's a pre-funded mandate. The legislature actually gave the money and said, here. Now, I mean, again, if it doesn't cover their costs, that's a separate bill, that's a separate discussion. But, and I understand the problem the counties have. I have been advocating probably ad nauseum that we need to get around, and with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'll breach into an issue that has nothing to do with you this morning. You need to tackle Measure 5 and Measure 50. Nothing's going to happen in the state with regard to local government finance until we grab that nettle. And I understand it's difficult, but that's the problem. We've taken away the ability of local governments to raise money at the local level, and in exchange now we're back. Almost every bill that comes in front of this committee is going to have some argument like this. My counsel to you, my hope is, yes, the counties can use some help. Let's talk about that in the right context. Talk about it holistically. Let's talk about it seriously, and let's not dime either this bill or the approach to the local needs, which I think are significant and serious. But again, that's a separate analysis from this bill. The money contained in this bill for affordable housing has a huge impact on affordable housing. It'll be wonderfully impactful there. It does not negatively impact the local governments. And we hope you'll vote this bill out. We believe it's a good bill. We think it'll make an impact on Oregonians' lives, and we commend it to you. Glad to take any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. I know you're all going to turn around to the folks behind you and say, how do we answer this? But I'm trying to get a scale. It seems to me that when I sit down to do any kind of a transaction around real estate, and let's just take a typical home transaction where the two come into the title company and they start signing documents, okay? Presumably under this bill, every one of those documents has $15 more attached to it. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in a typical residential real estate transaction, when I've talked to my members, the number of documents that recorded range between 1 and 4. There can conceivably be more than that, perhaps in some of the more complicated commercial transactions.
So my question is this. Both sign, but it's one recording? In other words, both parties, or are both parties paying for recording? Do you understand what I'm saying? say three. Say we each sign three things, okay, at the title company. Is that... Explain that to me.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Berger...
Here's what I'm trying to get at. We're talking about the counties, okay? We're talking about the Housing Alliance. I'm trying to get at the person who's actually paying the $15 and who those people are and what's going to be the impact on their lives of this proposal, because that hasn't come up yet. And so that's what I'm trying to get at. If I'm the one that's screaming at the county clerks, how much am I paying on a typical transaction? Because those are the people I'm trying to bring to the table here. Does that answer your question about my question?
What was the face we were supposed to make to the back again?
I don't know.
Here's the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the Representative Berger, when we discussed this with our members, when the Housing Alliance came before them, the typical, the average cost during a transaction that my members told me would be in, or the result of this particular legislation would be an additional $15 to $60.
Thank you. Per transaction or per person? Usually a transaction involves a buyer and a seller.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, it's per recorded document.
Yes. Right.
Regardless of who all signs the document, it's one recording.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to get at. Thank you.
And Representative Berger, members of the committee, I'll just add that typically when in a home transaction, if you were being financed through a bank, it would be the home buyer that paid those fees.
So it adds to the cost of a home, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to put a finer point on it, in a closing, it would be the buyer normally paying for the recording. Is that correct? But then you'd have to record something to get rid of the existing mortgage, so the seller would repay that, and then there'd probably be a mortgage that goes along with the buyer, so they'd pay that, so you'd have a deed and a mortgage and a satisfaction. So at least three documents, $45 additional money as a result of this deal. Am I right? Am I close?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, that's correct.
And then follow up.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Then in addition, there would be maybe an easement or maybe a clarification of some other recorded thing that might have to be cleaned up, so maybe another $15. But am I correct in understanding that the person paying normally would be the buyer, most of those fees?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, all fees in any transaction, as you know, are subject to negotiation and assignment within the transaction itself. Generally speaking, the person coming to the table with the money, which is the buyer, at least it used to be the buyer. I was actually enjoying the trip down memory lane talking about closing real estate transactions. Very nice. I appreciate that. Theoretically, the buyer has the money. The check is coming from the buyer's lender or the buyer himself, so that the transaction, you could say it would be attributed to the buyer. The way we generally look at these fees or any kind of fee is that it becomes part of the transactional cost.
Answer to question. Other questions of this panel? Thank you very much. We very much appreciate your testimony. I have two additional people who have signed up. Based on what they've indicated on the witness registration form, they don't agree with each other, but I'm going to call them both up at the same time anyway. And it looks like Linda Ludwig and Bill Burgess.
Hi, Linda.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Linda Ludwig from the League of Oregon Cities. I just want to indicate the League's support for this bill. We do have individual cities that are members of the Alliance and have been working with the Alliance on this bill. And our support really is for the policy of the bill, the need for more funds in the kitty for affordable housing. It's a huge need in our state. It has been, even in good economic times, and it is certainly continuing to grow. And we feel that this bill is reasoned and reasonable in the approach that it's taking. I'm not going to get into the weeds today and debate whether or not there needs to be some small tweaks or amendments or if there's equity in terms of how the county handles these recordings. But I really want to strongly encourage you to look at the policy, the underlying policy in the bill, and to support that today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Barnhart, Vice Chair Benz, and committee members, Bill Burgess, Marion County Clerk. I'm here today speaking just for myself and my elected office, not for the Clerks Association, because of the fact that we needed to take a position as a Clerks Association, and we didn't want to be in conflict as association with any of the commissions, our county commissioners. So I've come speaking as myself today. I oppose House Bill 2436. Affordable housing is laudable and necessary. I've been a supporter of affordable housing for years and years since my time on the Salem City Council, understanding the backlog and the need for affordable housing as a basic thing to keep our society healthy. However, ganging up to selectively tax a captive, innocent, trusting, and powerless small group of people is wrong. Assuming that people filing papers in the clerk office can and deserve to bear the burden of a stable housing program funding source is wrong. How am I to explain to someone filing a death certificate to clear title that they must now cough up another $15 or more, actually much more if the housing coalition were to meet the goal that they originally had. We record this instrument, a death certificate, about 500 times a year. We don't take all death certificates in our office, but just the ones that are needed to clear title to property. How about the person taking out a second mortgage or a line of credit that is financially strapped and desperately tapping into the dwindling home equity for an emergency, whether it be college, whether it be a roof, whether it be whatever unforeseen circumstance that they are having to do there? Is it right for us to add another fee to them? How many purchases, many home purchases require multiple instrument filings, have you spoken about here before? Sometimes just even a certificate of occupancy to even get into the house. And so it racks up multiple fees. These fees, by the way, are excluded from the advertised interest calculation. Nonetheless, if financed, the buyer may pay this three times over through the time of the mortgage. So if you paid four of these at $15, that'd be $60. Three times, maybe it'd be $180 more than one would have to pay. Traditionally, all fees collected on land records have been gone to support the land record system, including the Oregon Department of Revenue, working with land assessments, the county assessor's office, the county surveyor, and the county clerk recorder. Collection of monies from land records recording, just because it's handy and vulnerable, breaks trust with our long-standing tradition. If funds are extracted for affordable housing, what's next? We already know that the courts may be looking at court facility fees through these funds. Shall our recording customers be responsible for funding universal health care? Originally, the Affordable Housing Coalition planned to raise $100 million per biennium, with $60 million coming from recording fees. If the recordings in 36 counties were taxed at the presently proposed $15 per instrument rate in the last fiscal year, the realized revenue would be less than $15 million. Of course, recordings are proposing to be exempt from this tax, especially the ones that the state pays are going to become exempt, and the miners one, rightfully so, is being exempt. But this further reduces revenue in making them fall even shorter of the goal. On top of that, recordings purported to be a stable funding source have fallen over 20% this year, and they're still falling. So hopefully we've hit the bottom, but we really don't know. Of all the groups represented in the Affordable Housing Coalition and testifying for this measure, House Bill 2436, who's speaking up for our customers? I feel as if HB 2436 proponents, armed with knives and forks, are drooling with expectation over the succulent and savory fat hog they envision my customers to be. Recording customers should not be the main course or even the hors d'oeuvre. Please kill this measure, 2436, and find an equitable funding source for affordable housing.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions for either of these witnesses? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair. thank you, Bill, for saying what I was trying to say in the last who's speaking up for the folks who come to your office.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed in the first paragraph of your testimony, you said, ganging up to selectively tax a captive, innocent, trusting, and powerless small group of people is pretty strong language. In your opinion, do the people who come to your door and pay this consider it a tax?
Yes, I believe they would consider it a tax. Those that know about it, I suppose for some people it's all within the closing costs, and then they probably don't even know that they're financing it besides. But yes, especially the people that come in with the death certificates. You're already in a sensitive situation where somebody whose spouse has passed away in the last few weeks, sometimes they come in years later, but as Attorney Benz would know, but generally it's within a few weeks, a couple months of the death, and then right now we're charging them $26 for that, and it would be hard to explain to them why we need to charge even more for that. And then there are the people that are taking out those seconds or those home equity lines of credit just to get by right now. They're already hurting, and are we going to add another fee to them here, and plus other fees that you'll be hearing about later on to them there? It just seems to me that it's an unfair thing to do. And again, if they finance that fee, which some of them do, then they're paying that same fee three times more. And like folks have said, generally it takes it's rare that a home purchase would be done with just one filing. Two, three, four, six filings over the matter of a time of a few months is generally what happens.
Thank you. Representative Brennan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This may be a question for staff, but if I were to write a check just as an individual to the Housing Alliance, I assume it's a charitable gift. I'm wondering if home buyers can deduct this. I don't know if it's come up, Mazin, but if I'm charged $45 or $60 at a transaction to purchase a home, could I also call that a charitable gift to the Housing Alliance?
On your basis, doesn't it?
And with the tax benefits thereof?
Interesting question, Representative Bruin. Although this is by definition is a fee, it works as a tax, and that's why it's a 3/5 requirement. Unlike the other fees, which are for the work of the collection costs, I would have to check on that. I doubt this would be a charitable gift because it's not a gift.
It's not voluntary, but
right.
I'm wondering if it still has.
Yes. So it is not something that you could easily probably check on your.
Mr. Burks, maybe we're not goring that ox quite as much as we think we are. There's a tax credit opportunity.
Representative Benson and I were just talking about your question, and I think what our understanding is, and you please correct me if I miss it, is that these fees either get added to your basis for cost purposes, or under some circumstances you could deduct them on your income tax return. Have I got it?
Mr. Chairman, I think we need Representative Butler back because
yes, yes.
So the truth of it is, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, but that's our best guess at this moment.
Here.
Yeah. Other questions for this panel? I don't see any. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there others who wish to be heard today on House Bill
2436?
I don't see any. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2436 and open a work session on House Bill 2436. Colleagues, I want you to note that this bill has a subsequent referral on it to the Ways and Means Committee, and I would suggest that in our discussion we ought to ask the Ways and Means Committee to consider, and I don't think we have to do this in a motion, but in our discussion, to consider the issue that's been raised about fees and the allocation of them and the costs, but also an issue which really hasn't been discussed at all, and of course, probably the reason for the referral to Ways and Means is the cost of about $700,000 a year, perhaps more, to the Department of Revenue and perhaps other departments, as demonstrated in the fiscal analysis. That's money, of course, which comes out of some of which at least comes out of the general fund budget. Not an issue for this committee to consider, but certainly one the Ways and Means has to consider as they think about what their budget's going to look like. Is there a motion to recommend that do pass on this bill and a referral to the Ways and Means Committee? Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I move that this bill be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves the bill, House Bill 2436, be referred to the floor and initially to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion about that motion? Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think that this bill needs more work, more time. I'm uncomfortable with the due pass recommendation. Can we consider sending it to Ways and Means with no recommendation?
Okay, well, that's a possibility. Other discussion? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would join Representative Berger in that thought. I have to say I did agree with some of the testimony regarding the means of utilizing the existing mechanism. I also understand that the need that's being filled with this bill. There's a certain sense I deal with these things every day. I have many opportunities to have had to explain the nature of these filing fees to clients. And so it's quite the challenge to explain why they were selected as the ones who are going to be paying this kind of fee. On the other hand, things could be worse. And so that's why I'm supporting it. But without the due pass, I would join Representative Berger in that thought.
Mr. Chair, could I have one more comment?
Yes, Representative Berger.
The other issue that I think Ways and Means needs to talk about, which did not come before our testimony here, but was brought up with the clerks, was the provision in here that there are costs to administer this program that are borne by the agency that's getting the money. And we have had no discussion about that. And I definitely think Ways and Means needs to see, you know, how many more FTEs are going to be brought into the agency and that kind of thing. And so I really think that would be appropriate for this to go down to Ways and Means for the thorough discussion without recommendation.
Thank you. Other conversation on the motion. Are you ready to vote on the motion? I guess we are. Please call the roll. The motion is to refer the bill to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Berger.
No.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Gelzer.
Aye.
Representative Call.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
No.
Aye. It looks to me as though the vote is 7-3. Did I get that right?
Yes.
I did. Thank you. The motion has received the required majority and is adopted, and the bill will go to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2436. We are about out of our time for today. And we have two additional bills to be heard. Is there anybody here? Could I have attention, please? If you have conversations, please take them in the hall. If there's anyone here who would like to be heard today, who's from 100 miles away or further, on House Bill 2160 or House Bill 2048. Let us know about that. The people I have signed up are not from that far away. Yeah, just the department. Okay. All right. Well, with that, I'm going to hold over the public hearings on House Bill 2160 and House Bill 2048 until tomorrow. So we will hear those bills, the public hearing on those bills tomorrow. We're not going to do them today. Paul, have I given the notice I need to give? I have. All right. Thank you very much. And with that, the committee is adjourned until tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're very indulgent.